live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Education Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. Go to my website, TotalTutor.org, to find out more information on the Total Education Network, now syndicated 80-plus stations. Go to the website. Check it out. I also own a Birth Through College tutoring consulting company. You can call me at 412-523-0289 for a free phone evaluation of your child. And I'm really excited always when my co-host comes by. Jared, how are you?
Very good, Neil. Great to be talking to you again, and can't wait to continue with our subject.
And I noticed that this time the crickets are in your background, not mine, and I'm a happy camper because of how they were on the windowsill yesterday. But that just talks about resiliency, and hopefully the studio, when we're recording for the Total Education Hour tonight, will not have crickets in the background. But I understand that you have to be outside, but that you're on location, not the Total Education Network studios. Let's go right to the point. We have been talking about high school students getting prepared for college, and the importance of that, and how important it is in the process to be ready to go on and get into the school they want. And we've gone through an enormous amount of steps from their freshman year, ninth grade, all the way now to junior year. And now we're at that junior year point. We talked about, you know, setting up those goals and objectives, picking and choosing those schools, making those college visits in 10th grade, and then kind of evaluating them and finally coming up with a plan of action of how they're going to be successful for the year. One of those things is the GPA. 11th grade is so important because you have to, Jared. I mean, you have to have a good GPA, especially if you're shooting for the school you want to go to.
Well, Neil, let's actually talk a little bit about that. In your experience with all the students that you work with, what makes that 11th grade year more important than the senior year? If I were a college administrator, I'd almost be looking to see, I would think I'd be looking to see what the grade point average is for at least that first semester of senior year. But you tell our listeners, what makes the junior year so significant?
Well, what makes that junior year so significant, in my opinion, is the ultimate thing is that this is the year where you can finally kind of measure the whole year. Freshman and sophomore year, they look at those grades, but junior year is the key. When you're a senior, by the time you apply, it's November or December, you're not seeing a full resume in 12th grade. 11th grade, you're going to see that full resume. You're going to see, okay, this is what they were able to perform in one of the hardest years in school. I think a lot of high schools have the highest level courses kids take junior year. Because the senior year, I wouldn't say it's blow off, but you have a lot more electives that you can take. You don't have to take as many high level courses as a senior. So they really want to look at how did you perform in a year where you're the most mature compared to 9th and 10th grade and being able to take on the hardest classes.
Right.
And one thing I heard, Jared, is guess what? The days of just taking college prep courses, They throw them out like your GPA is nothing. They want kids to be taking honors courses, some of these schools, to even consider them now.
What would we be – what are they looking for as far as the honors courses? Are they focusing on the sciences, the math, kind of the – philosophy type, what's most important for colleges?
What I think they want to do is they want to make sure that they're taking courses, all honors courses, because you're comparing them to other countries now. People who are applying for schools, which we're going to get to the application process next. It's quite interesting how much we can talk about this and how quickly we can go into a lot of different topics on this, and I know people are paying attention to this. I've learned a lot from great experts that I've talked to on the Total Education Network, but I kind of tweaking my program the way I think it should be done. So basically, the colleges want them to take the hardest courses. They want to see how they can be able to perform. So then they look at those grades, and that's just part of the process. Now, Jarrett, you take the SAT or the ACT. Which one should you take? Let's see if you have been paying attention. It's going to be some time till your son has to take the ACT or SAT. You and I will be in walkers. I'm just kidding. No, we'll be a lot older then, and maybe a little gray as well, and probably have no hair in our heads by then.
I would tell my son to find out which one he thought was the easier of the two, and then take those. Only because when I took the SATs, certainly my skill level didn't exactly show through with my SAT score. I'll just ask you, what do you feel? What would you share with our listeners? What's the advantages of the SATs? What's the advantages of the ACT?
Let me quote a couple people that have helped me. Manuel Fabricker from College ABC Planning talked about the ACT being an easier test, meaning it's more straightforward. You have to be intelligent to do well, but the questions don't trick you every question. I went ahead and I'm not a certified math teacher, so don't say, oh, you know, Neil Haley, the total tutor. No, he could tutor math, but he's not a certified math teacher. He has top experts when we get to the high-level math. I've taken sample problems of the SAT and the ACT. The ACT is simple because it's straightforward. It just shows your mathematical knowledge. It shows your reading knowledge, which is amazing. And they have English, but then also science. So it shows those areas, but they're not trick. It's more content knowledge. Kind of like the questions we took in our teacher's exams, Jarrett.
Right.
Meaning they weren't trick questions. They just wanted to see that we knew the content.
Right.
I like that kind of a test better, really. What is your thought?
Well, as a teacher, you always were instructed to test what you taught. So certainly the ACT makes perfect sense as far as a content knowledge test. I like the idea of testing what you feel juniors and seniors, for seniors that might be taking it later, but testing on what you think they've learned.
Exactly. Testing what you think they learned going specifically. So I like that idea. Well, the SAT it depends on the school, so you have to check and see which one to take. My recommendation, take the ACT. In Pennsylvania, not many people take the ACT. You go out in California, Ohio, different areas, the ACT is more taken. So I think taking both tests are a very important thing. So you get your SAT scores, your ACT scores where you need to go. Guess what happens? Right then and there, you're in a process, and it's you're going into your senior year. So we've gone through this junior year, Jarrett, to the point where we've taken our tests, we've gotten the scores we want. Are we going to sit idle till it's time to fill out applications in September or October? No.
I was going to say, I probably would, but I know that you are going to share with our listeners that that is not the time to rest.
No, it's the time to practice for the college essay. The essay is one of the most important things of a college application. If you do not perform well in the essay, a lot of times your application is going to be thrown out. And we're kind of talking about the schools that are dream schools for parents out there or kids, that if you want to even be part of this competition, you have to follow this. And by taking a year early in this process, they're golden. Their test scores are right. Their GPA is right. Now work on the college essay. And that's going to lead us to that senior year and the preparation of how we apply to things. But that I would really, before even starting to write that essay, I would practice writing. I would get, because I really think that we're lacking that in public schools and private schools. Get your teenagers to start practice writing. If it's something they enjoy, whatever, in essay form, creating the ability to really analytically think, not just spit out information, but really explain things well and have good arguments leading up to selling yourself. And that's one of the other keys. Throughout this junior year and sophomore year and ninth grade year, the more extracurricular activities you're involved in, the better. And we're not talking basketball, football, soccer, hockey. That's okay, but what I've heard, it's ones that show your maturity. Let's say it's very interesting. One of my students is involved in the Bishop's program where she teaches CCD, and she also is involved in a lot of the types of service projects. That is key. They want to see maturity. They want to see a leadership mentality, not just grades. And that's interesting to know, right, Jarrett?
Very much so. I mean, so many times I think that sneaks up on the student, you know, when they've done all this preparation, they've scored well on the SATs, the ACTs, their grades are good, and suddenly they look at their kind of high school resume and they found out that, you know, they haven't really reached out. They haven't really branched out. In a way, almost have been kind of self-absorbed.
So you got those extra cricks. You're looking at the specific extracurricular activities now, Jared, and you're on your way. In many, many ways, you're on your way to the next level and the next step in this process. And so you make sure you're involved in things that show leadership.
I was going to say, let me jump in here, and I want to ask. And again, in your experience, you've dealt so much with this and guiding students to this goal. Is there something that you think that the colleges are really looking for? I mean, is the Democratic, Young Democratic Club, the Young Republican Club, is that more important than, say, being a part of the Salvation Army?
No, no, I would say all of them are important, showing leadership, showing the ability that you're involved in something. Let's say you're part of a business club and you created a product already. Like I had someone that won the Aria Eppinger from Pittsburgh. She was from Carlo Campus School, and in fourth grade, she already won a business scholarship type deal. Those are things they're looking at. They're looking at, wow, the ability for you to really differentiate yourself from other people. That's right. The key. So looking at these different projects, service is huge. The ability to be involved in lots of different clubs where you're showing leadership. You can't just be, let's say, in the club. You need to be the leader of that club. You have to show lots of different things. This is what I'm coming up with if I was looking at a resume. So that when you write that college essay, Jared, that's why I'm talking about how important the extra cricks are. You can sell yourself that you are going to be the superstar when you enter that campus. And that's the problem that we're running into. It's an international competition now. Harvard, Yale, CMU. You're not looking at just their GPA or their SAT, ACT scores. You're looking at the full package. And if you've done a lot of cool things, you've been really interesting and you know, have a great resume, if you can't put it down on paper, guess what, Jared? You're going to be going to another school. So all these things are out there for parents so that they finally see that this is something that we can't put off. We can't procrastinate with. And that's one of the things I tell my families all the time. Always have high expectations. Just to finish up, my daughter Ava, now in going into the second grade, what I do in the mornings with her, because I don't really have the chance to work with her as a tutoring at night, is we kind of go through specific things. I'm teaching her a lot of Latin prayers right now, and also I'm teaching her the ability to learn her multiplication tables already. Why? Because if you're ahead of the class, that's your first step on your way to where you want to go. Because competition in education.
Well, I can certainly see you're already preparing Ava to be president of the Latin club. And I mean, considering how used Latin is today, I mean, you're really on the right step.
Oh, thank you again, Jared. All right. So that was great, Jared. We'll talk soon. And I look forward to our next segment to finally finish this up. And then, Jared, we have to figure out something that you're going to have like a five-part series. So start thinking about your five-part series now, because I didn't mean to do that, but, hey, I'm just too much of a windbag and can continue to talk. So thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Yeah. All right, take care, Jared. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Toll Education Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Show on the Total Education Network. Remember, go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. Well, I always have to thank my publicist. She's able to come up with such fantastic ideas and great guests. And now having the ability to record interviews throughout the day, any day of the week, I have found a very, very interesting guest, an author, Dr. Vaughn Lauer. Dr. Vaughn, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak.
I'm excited and many different topics, but I am really interested in your book, and you told me the name of it, and you could say it again, but what I will say before you even get to that is my passion for special needs kids. I'm an educational advocate. I absolutely fight for these kids every day on the radio show, thinking that they're just getting the short end of the stick, so I'm quite interested to learn about your book.
I appreciate that. The title is When the School Says No, How to Get the Yes. And it's based on something that I call the structured collaborative IEP process. And oftentimes you'll hear about collaboration, getting along, working together, but still nobody knows what steps you need to take to make that happen. The structured part of it is that there are six key questions that are asked at an IEP meeting, and then the team members, each of them, nobody gets away with just sitting there, and including the parents. one of the six questions are asked, and then the question is answered, and it's answered in a way so that everybody agrees. So let me give you an example, if I may. Let's suppose we have a student. It doesn't matter what disability it is because it's applicable to all students. Actually, you could apply this to any meeting that you are having with an educator at school. But let's take, for example, a child who speaks very well, who can explain to you in almost complete sentences anything they need to tell you, and you sit back and you go, wow, I understand everything you're saying, and you said it well. But when you ask that child to put that same idea down on paper, he can't. It's either because of spelling. Writing is a very complicated process because you have to organize it in your head. You have to think in advance, what am I going to say? What am I going to say next? Then you also involve the motor part of taking the pen or pencil and holding it down and remembering that thought and getting it all written out. Okay, so that can be a problem. And so at the meeting, you say, okay, what is it that we know about this particular child? And somebody brings up this particular item and says, when it comes to writing, he has or she has great difficulty expressing himself. And everybody in the room will say, I'm going to make this an easy example for me, but everybody in the room will say, I see the same problem. Science teacher does, the English teacher does, it does not matter. When that child's asked to write, it's a struggle. And so everybody has agreed to this. Well, the next question is then, where do we want to go from here? Now, you're starting to actually write the IEP in terms of what is our goal. Well, our goal isn't necessarily to have him write better. It is to convey his thinking through a written format. Okay, the next question would be, how are we going to get there? And of course, everybody agrees, that's what we're after. And somebody suggests, for example, drag and dictate, which is a program that you can speak into, and it will transcribe your language into through the computer and type it word for word as you speak it. So we're finding this process to continue where we present a question, we propose a solution, and I made it really, really simple for this example, and we agree to it. It's not a concept of catching anybody,
right,
or catching the district, because that's not right. That's not fair. It's not fair to the school. But at each level in the process, everybody is reaching agreement. Based on a previous question, based on a previous question. So when it comes time to complete the IEP, you don't have somebody saying, well, you know what? I think the program XYZ should be provided to the student. And somebody will say, well, why do you want to bring that up? Well, you know, it addresses reading comprehension. Well, but that's not what we're talking about. Or the person says, Why are we writing in that we're going to purchase Drag and Dictate? That question becomes moot because you've already discussed the rationale. You've stated the need. You stated what it is you want to accomplish in measurable terms, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. And what I'm getting from you, Dr. Vaughn, is basically a lot of times districts they look at a student and they don't look at the ways that you can adapt and modify and look at their strength. It looks like what you talked about in that one example was the child had a specific strength and was able to do the skill one way, but couldn't write it down on paper, wasn't able to spell, but had the ability to do it cognitively, but not in a specific way like the rest of the students. So creating that objective with a tool to use brings success, right?
You said that very well. Yes, that's exactly the point. Again, as a group, they've reached agreement. That's the collaboration part. And how I've created the book is I've taken scenarios of IEP meetings where the parents have agreed to write a scenario where they either were or were not successful at an IEP meeting. And most of these stories are, when I get them, they're 25, 30 pages, double space pages long. And I will then go through the six questions, and I only hit, I think, four of them here, and analyze the IEP process and indicate where maybe one of the questions was implemented in the IEP and show at the IEP meeting and show why it was successful or show why they could never reach agreement because, for example, they never agreed on a child's needs.
Right, exactly.
So it's been very interesting. I met a lot of friends with parents who have spent time with me after submitting the stories, and I can share with you that I had my very special favorite day, I think, was yesterday.
Oh, let's hear about this.
I'm sorry?
Let's hear about this. Yeah, that's great.
Oh, yes. I had a couple of emails come in to me. One was a parent who had struggled for this previous school year and finally got everything she wanted when the school found out. She decided, I'm just going to move to another school district. It's too hard to get what I need here. And she sent me an email of the new schools, and in it, it indicated, it showed where she wrote to the teacher, here's everything I want you to know about my daughter. And the teacher wrote back, well, this is what I do in the classroom. This is how I would approach meeting with your daughter and so on and so forth. And Mom thought that was really great. But the best news was when her daughter came home, she was happy. She had not seen her, third grader, come home happy in 2 years.
That's great.
And it's because she was in the position to explain to the school teacher, what they knew. Here are the facts. Here's the information about my child so that you can start designing a plan to address her needs. So that made me just delighted. Another parent sent me, there's a lot more to it, but just for the sake of time, I'll limit it to that.
So is it based on your book in a way, or you're just finally seeing some changes in public education that finally they're trying to look at strategies like you're saying in the book that are needed to make success? Was it somehow something in your book that led to that?
It was both, because Mom took the time to say, here's what we know, that which is the first question.
Yeah, absolutely.
And secondarily to that, here's a teacher in a whole different school system that's saying, I'm more than happy to work on that. Thank you for pointing these things out. This is what we normally do. And it was a combination of the two. I don't want people thinking that all school systems are anti-students with special education.
They're definitely not. I don't think they're educated well. Dr. Vaughn. I think that that's more the problem. I think that from my experience as an educational advocate, a lot of times the parents don't know what questions to ask. That's why they bring someone in like myself that knows what questions and has been an educator to give the district what some help and what to do, because a lot of times they don't know what to do, or they are wanting that parent feedback.
Exactly. And it walks them through that, walks them through the process, and the parent has that kind of, well, I know what I'm going to ask, and I know what I'm looking for, and I know silliness when I hear it. And if the school happens, I'm a little sidetracking here, but if the school says, well, the policy or regulation is this, that, or the other thing, then I say in the book, then ask if it sounds odd to you or you've never heard it before, ask for a copy of that policy. You'd be surprised how many times that policy doesn't exist.
Right.
On the other hand, it does. The parent just wasn't aware, but it negates having to learn all of the regulations of IDEA, which
yes.
is tough.
It's a challenge a lot of times, but I think that when we look at special needs kids and we look at specifically what we want them to do and figure out ways that they can do it, that might be different alternative to the rest of the regular ed kids. That's what IDEA is about. The ability to individualize instruction through an individualized education plan. And if that's not happening, I think that a lot of parents think they can just get anything, get away with anything. No, no, no. The key component is they need to be on the same playing field as the rest of the students, correct?
Very well said. Yes, agreed. Yes. And ultimately, you get an IEP through this process that's written based on the identified needs, that meets the child's needs, and it's not written to meet an individual's need, like the parent or a teacher, because it can be that way,
yes,
or an institutional need. It's based, the whole thing is focused on the kid's needs. So your chance of being successfully teaching that child is far advanced if it's written based on his or her needs and not somebody else's.
Well, Dr. Vaughn, what's amazing is that we could talk for hours on this, and getting a 13 to 14 minute interview, just because I interview about four people a show, it's definitely not enough time. We're going to definitely have to have more than part two, but we might need to break down specific terms that you've covered in your book, specific things, because you and I, especially with a little bit of my background being involved in special education as a teacher and an advocate, we really can kind of explain this to families and see how valuable your book is. And I really am impressed what you're doing, because if you can educate the parent, that's the key thing to finally end a lot of the relationships between the special needs parents and the school district. Because when they know what the right things to say, what a great thing. So where can we find more information on you, purchase your book, and learn more about what you do, Dr. Vaughn?
Well, I wish the book were out.
Oh,
it's not. I'm finishing it now. It will be sent to the publisher in the next month, and I'm hoping that they will be publishing it mid-year at the latest of next year. But I could give you later, I could give a website if somebody
Absolutely.
Wants.
Give us a website, definitely.
Okay. It's the usual www. Educational Learning and Training. educationallearningandtraining.com.
And Dr. Vaughn, I know that you have some experience with the ETS and a lot of different interesting things, so everyone should go to the website, but I really enjoyed learning about when the book comes out, but I think that we can touch upon so many different topics in our discussion, so I really appreciate you calling, and we'll definitely be in touch, okay?
Well, I look forward to that. Thanks again for the opportunity. Have a great day, Neil.
Take care, Dr. Vaughn. Okay, bye-bye. All right, that was Dr. Vaughn Lauer. You're listening to the Total Education Show on the Total Education Network. We'll be back in just a moment.